And welcome to episode 6 of the QE2 Experience podcast. I'm Salvatore Stefanelli, one of your co-hosts of this podcast. On the line with me is my enchanting co-host, Jim Sonnes of Numberphire. You can find Jim on Twitter at Jim, S-A-N-N-E-S. Jim, how are you doing this evening?
I am doing much better now, Sal. What's up? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Trying to get over our week 5 blunders.
Yeah, it could have been better.
I know. I mean, whenever I write the show note intro for the podcast on iTunes, I always put like our hits and misses in there.
Yeah.
And like, I try very hard not to gloat about everything
right.
when it comes in fantasy. Because last week I wanted to put down in hits everything. And misses nothing, but I'm like, no, that's not going to make me or Jim look good. It'll just make us look like a couple of conceited bastards. So I'm like, okay, I'll hold off on that. But then based on our calls last week, our hits were basically Brian Hoyer and our misses was pretty much everything else.
Yeah.
So I guess it was karma kind of bloody to bite me in the butt here.
So
bloody is a good word to describe it. I'll just quickly recap the players we recommended last week. So our top streamers were Carson Wentz and whoever started for the Denver Broncos, which ended up being Paxton Lynch. And then in our Rumford, I'm not sure what's on my mind right now, but rapid fire recommendations, we had Joe Flacco, Brian Hoyer, Derek Anderson, and I put in Drew Stanton. I'll let Jim off the hook for that one. So if we look at all of those quarterbacks, the best was Brian Hoyer's QB5 with almost 24 fantasy points, and the worst was, can't even bring myself to say, but Derek Anderson scored just 5.5 fantasy points as a QB28.
My notes here for the accountability section is just QB28 and a big ol' whelp. Like, that was just bad. I know that, like, a lot of it was based on the matchup, and that seemed fine because Greg Olsen just tore the Bucks apart. But apparently Derek Anderson isn't quite as good as I had envisioned him being in my mind.
I mean, the thing is, it wasn't just us talking about Derek Anderson. I feel like Derek Anderson was mentioned by every single analyst I follow on Twitter. I'm not trying to put blame on anybody or anything, but it just felt like the community as a whole was on Derek Anderson last week.
Yeah, and he's a guy who I liked quite a bit. Like, if you had asked me where would I rank him among our streaming recommendations last week, and knowing that he would start, I probably would have said – I would have said above Flacco for sure, above Hoyer for sure, and probably above the Simeon Lynch two-headed monster. He would have been behind Wentz in my mind, but I did not see that type of performance coming.
Yeah, no, I mean, if I still did rankings, I probably would have had him as a top 12 option last week easily.
And I wouldn't have blamed you for a second for that, no.
It's just one of those weeks. I mean, we've seen what Tampa Bay can do against quarterbacks. I mean, in fantasy, they've allowed some bad performances, but they've also kind of been okay against certain quarterbacks. You know, two top 6 finishes allowed, but then the rest were 15, 16, and QB27 Derek Anderson last week.
And it's weird because, like, they made Paxton Lynch look pretty good in his game against them. And then Lynch goes out against an Atlanta Falcons team that's better than the Buccaneers, but he just tosses a complete dud. And I think that, at least to me, Sal, and I want to know what your thoughts are on this, but is it possible that, you know, after seeing Paxton Lynch in the same environment, did we underrate Trevor Siemian relative to the situation in Denver?
No, I think that's a really good question. And two, I think I'm with you there. I mean, the matchup was one of probably the best matchup of the week against the Atlanta Falcons defense. We've seen how quarterbacks have fared against the Falcons this year so far. You know, and Paxton Lynch scored just 2 points more than what he scored in relief in week 4 against the Bucks, which, you know, is not that good. So, I mean, going into the game, I sort of started having some more hesitations about maybe Denver would be more run-oriented. It'd be more about CJ Anderson. And then after the game, you read all these reports from the Atlanta defense saying they kind of, you know, knew what Paxton Lynch was going to do that game. So it's like, just like maybe it was just something about him in his first real start. Being a rookie, still learning the game. I mean, there's a lot of factors into, you know, his actual final performance that we probably didn't spend a whole lot of time trying to, predict.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like it's – I think it was – we had assumed that Simeon's, you know, mild competence was based on a lot of the situation. I still think that is the case, but it's possible that, you know, maybe neither of these guys is really that good. But Simeon definitely appears to be the better option, and he's in a decent spot this week going up against the Chargers. I'm interested in how he'll do there. It's not a guy who I'd be, jumping out of windows to get in stream this week. But, you know, I think that they could tell us quite a bit how he fares against that beat up Chargers defense.
Yeah, especially if he's playing. I don't think he's going to be playing at 100% too. So if he goes out and has a good game at less than 100%, I think we need to, you know, bump up our expectations rest of season for Trevor Siemian. Right. You know, the Broncos were 4-0. With him. They lose their first game of the season without him. I know it's not all on Trevor Siemian's shoulders, but when you look at it from a situation standpoint in fantasy football, no, head coaches are less hesitant to bench their quarterbacks if they're winning. Even if they're not performing at a high level, they still prefer to have that stability in play. So, I mean, that was go ahead.
Yeah, based on quarterback wins, Trevor Siemian's the MVP. I mean, it's pretty obvious to me. My vote is already cast, so I can't change it for the rest of the season, but Trevor Siemian is the league's MVP.
Oh, I think he's co-MVP with Sam Bradford.
Yeah, my bad, Sam. That's my bad. Sean Hill may have taken a bit away from Sam Bradford in my eyes, because Sean Hill was also the GOAT in his 1 week, but that's okay.
No, I'll give you that one. But I just I wanted to touch upon Trevor Siemian quickly because, you know, heading into the season, you know, the one thing we always talked about Trevor Siemian was, you know, we gave him the game manager label and a good defense. And as long as the team would win, it would be hard to see Paxton Lynch start. Then we actually saw Paxton Lynch start against a very bad defense, and he didn't look so good. So it kind of gives, you know, more credence to Siemian playing out the rest of the season as long as he's healthy. And in two quarterback leagues, I still think a lot of people have this stigma against Siemian in terms of his, you know, ability as a quarterback, that, you know, his value can probably be had at a relatively fair price in a trade. So if you're looking for, you know, a cheap quarterback to pick up via the trade in your two quarterback league, I still think Trevor Siemian is someone to trade for. And he has a pretty decent, you know, schedule coming up. You know, Jim mentioned he's got the Chargers this week. After that, it's Houston, then the Chargers again, and then back-to-back games against Oakland and New Orleans.
Yeah, that's a really good stretch, and I think that we've seen that he can, you know, he's probably not going to burn your team to the ground. So yeah, I agree. I think that he could be a very interesting trade target right now.
All right, so we'll move on from our accountability section. We'll just quickly recap the players we recommended you bench last week. I was on the bench Matt Stafford train. Jim was on bench Matt Ryan. Stafford was the QB10, so that was a big L on my forehead. And Matt Ryan finished as a QB18. He scored almost 15 fantasy points, so it's kind of, you know, hit or miss in terms of, you know, it definitely wasn't Matt Ryan from week one to week four.
Right. Yeah, and I think that in your defense, the Stafford one was kind of fluky. It all happened in the first half. He just happened to get three touchdown passes because the Lions can't run the ball. I think that in your defense, he was kind of on the positive side of randomness. Matt Ryan was kind of where I expected. I think that, that's a fine performance. It's startable for sure. But overall, I think that you may have gotten a raw end of some variance there with Matt Stafford.
I mean, and plus those were, you know, he scored two short touchdowns to Theoretic, yeah, if I recall, which could have been rushing touchdowns if they knew how to run the ball, as you just mentioned. They know how to run the ball. Just maybe sometimes it doesn't happen that effectively. Definitely can run the ball better than I could. So that pretty much recaps week five. It gives an opportunity to look back and now move forward, where we hopefully have a much better week in terms of results over process for week six. Our first top streaming QB2 candidate of week six is our friend, our boy, our loyal Tyrod Taylor, a.k.a. the Ty Goat. This didn't go so well for us the first time we recommended Tyrod Taylor back in week one, did it, Jim?
No, not really. I think that, you know, that was a weird one. I think that I'm still kind of in the boat that the Ravens defense is better than we thought. So, I mean, that right now, based on number of fires metrics, they're 10th. That game was on the road. There was a lot of wind in that game. You know, he had a lot of factors working against him, but I think that for both you and me, Tyrod has kind of wiggled his way back up into our good graces the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the matchup against Baltimore. The win definitely had an impact. He was 15 of 22 for 111 yards, which was his lowest passing output of the season, and he only had 11 rushing yards, which is something we kind of, you know, hope Tyrod has more of each week to kind of boost his floor, and that was also his lowest of the season. And his 5.54 fantasy points was, again, also the lowest of the season. And if we look at what Baltimore has done against quarterbacks this whole season, they've only allowed one quarterback to finish in the top 12. The other four quarterbacks to finish as QB 31, QB 22, QB 22 again, and QB 23. So it kind of lends credence to your point that Baltimore's defense is better than we give it credit for.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of surprising me. I hadn't looked at their numbers just to back check on Taylor. But, you know, I think that this makes this spot for Tyrod even a little bit better, just because that's his one big dud of the year. And you look at the San Francisco 49ers, who will face on Sunday. The Bills, they check every box here that we look for in a quarterback streamer. They're 7.5-point favorites in a game with an implied team total of 26. Yeah, still 26 for the Bills right now. And the reason that we love targeting quarterbacks against the 49ers is that they run such a high pace on offense. And what that does is it gives additional plays for the opposing offense because you can get more plays in a game. And that's a big boost for Tyrod Taylor because the Bills don't throw often and or they run a mediocre pace and then they're a pretty run heavy team. But when you give extra plays for Taylor, they're not going to run LeSean McCoy 45 times. I mean, they might, but I kind of doubt it. But either way, you're boosting his volume here, and it should be efficient volume against a defense like the 49ers. Tyrod, you know, even without Sammy Watkins, he's currently number five's 18th most efficient quarterback. It's not great, but again, it's better than I would have expected without Sammy Watkins. And I think that it says that he can do well even in games looking forward without Sammy. The wind speeds, though, are the one concern that I have here. Last time I checked, they were at 17 miles per hour for this game. Again, my danger zone is around 10 miles per hour or so, and this is a good chunk around there. Right now it's at 18 miles per hour, according to NumberFire, so it's not getting better. I would keep checking on that wind speed just to make sure throughout the week. I still think he'll have a decent floor, but his upside would kind of vanish if that wind speed stays up there. So check on that, but I think that if things line up okay for Tyrod, for me at least, he'd be a really good option against this high-paced offense.
You know, the wind speed is giving me concern. Like, ever since you've mentioned this in one of our earlier podcasts and what happened in that game with Joe Flacco and Tyrod Taylor in week one, it's been playing a lot more of an impact in my quarterback decisions. But I still feel comfortable enough starting Tyrod Taylor in this particular situation because of his rushing floor.
Yeah.
San Francisco so far this year is allowing 3.8 rushing attempts per game to the quarterback position, which is the eighth most in the league. And Tyrod has rushed for five or more times in four of his five games this year, which adds, you know, a little bit of an extra boost to his performance. You know, his passing output hasn't been that great. They don't have Sammy Watkins. They're kind of more of a run-oriented team, as we know. But I think that kind of helps in the short run, where in terms of Tyrod, we get more opportunities to scramble, more designed run calls, and more short passes to the running backs, which whenever I turn into a Buffalo Bills game, it kind of seems like all I see is Tyrod Taylor throwing to LeSean McCoy. I don't know if that's the game plan for every play, but I see that almost every time I tune into that game. So I think those factors all add up to Tyrod having a safe floor in this game. I'm not sure how the ceiling will be because of the wins and how many pass attempts they'll be able to, you know, complete. I don't see any deep balls being thrown in this one, so that does hurt. But no, we've seen what Tyrod has done since that week one. He's kind of salvaged his fantasy season. I know we're kind of worried about him going forward after what he did against Baltimore, but since that game, he's averaged 18.3 fantasy points in his last four and has four straight top 15 finishes. So I'm not as worried as I once was about Tyrod, so I still feel he has a decent potential to be like a low-end QB1 in this game.
Yeah, and it's not as if like they've had cake matchups every time either. I mean, it's been like a semi-respectable schedule. The one, I guess, you know, pretty easy outing was against the Jets. As we know now, we didn't know it then, but we do know now that the Jets are apparently a team to target with your quarterbacks. But Arizona has a good defense, New England, a pretty decent defense, and Los Angeles has a good defensive front. They're pretty beat up in the secondary, but overall, I mean, you know, there are some tough games in there. And I think that of the teams that Tyrod has played so far, the ease of opponent, this would probably be his second best one following the Jets. And I think that that definitely does help him. And I, you know, listening to what you're saying, I think I do kind of agree that even if the winds are high, that rushing upside does give him viability, even if the weather doesn't fully cooperate.
Yeah, I know. And San Fran's allowed 3 top 12 fantasy performances to quarterbacks this week. If you combined, I think it's Trevon Boykin and Russell Wilson's performance that one week. So, I mean, we've seen San Francisco allow points to the quarterback position. That high pace helps. I think that high pace helps in terms of, you know, rushing attempts for Tyrod, whether they're designed or, you know, spontaneous. Just because if you're running that many plays, it just gives you more chances, you know, do what you want to do with football.
Right.
So, like I said, I know you mentioned earlier, 26 points implied total, 7.5 home favorites. Kind of checks the boxes for Tyrod Taylor this week.
Yep, I feel pretty good with it. I'd feel great about him if it weren't for the weather, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. If only they played in a dome. All right, so that's enough Tyrod Taylor talk for the week. Let's move on to our next recommended QB2 streamer, who is Alex Smith, someone you may have heard of from this podcast. If you're new to listening, this podcast was almost once called the Alex Smith Experience for every week. But we kind of had to nix that one. So this week, Alex Smith gets the Oakland Raiders on the road, which, you know, as we've seen just this year, you know, Alex Smith on the road doesn't really kind of, like, when you talk about home, road, over, under, implied team totals, Alex Smith almost kind of, like, is oblivious to all of those. But no, we'll go over it quickly. 46.5 over under, 23.25 employed. Yeah, Alex Smith is employed. He makes more than $23.25 an hour, though, I can guarantee you that.
I hope.
Yeah, I hope so too. But yeah, 23.25 implied team total. Last time I checked on the Number Fire Daily Helper page, both teams had the exact same implied team total.
Yeah, the spread's moved. It opened up with the Raiders' favor, but it's now a pick'em right now, which definitely does favor Smith.
And as we mentioned with Tyrod earlier, this game also has some wind speed concerns. It's currently at 15 miles per hour. So the concerns we had with Tyrod Taylor and the wind, you can just kind of transfer what we said there to this game. It might be a running theme for the rest of this podcast. Just a little foreshadowing there for our listeners. So I was playing around with the RotoViz Game Splits app earlier today, and I was kind of looking at, you know, Alex Smith's performances against the Oakland Raiders since he became a Kansas City Chief. So he's played 6 games in the 3 years before this season, because they haven't played yet this year. But according to the Game Splits app, Alex Smith is averaging about 5.1 more fantasy points per game against Oakland than any other team since joining the Chiefs. The interesting thing that I noticed in the graphic that comes up on the site is his attempts, completions, and yards are all down against the Raiders. But his touchdowns go from 1.2 per game to 2.17 per game when he's playing the Raiders. So almost he's scoring a touchdown more per game against the Raiders than any other team since joining the Chiefs, which is definitely going to boost up your fantasy points.
Whew, that's a lot. Yeah. Alex Smith, the gunslinger. That's awesome. Yeah, and I think that I was dinking around with the same thing. You were talking about the RotoViz Splits app, and I was doing the same thing. And, you know, not just looking at the Raiders, but just in general, when Alex Smith is either it's either a pick'em game or an underdog, he does better. You know, he averages more touchdowns, fewer interceptions per game when his team is either an underdog or at a pick'em, and averages 33 more yards passing. And I think that what that is, it kind of reflects Andy Reid's you know, willingness to go to the ground game once they get up. But, you know, Oakland's offense has looked really good this year, and I think that that does, again, play in the Chiefs' favor because they're not going to be able to just ride, you know, whether it be Spencer Ware or Jamaal Charles. They're going to have to, you know, throw the football a decent amount. The Raiders' defense, too, is one to target. I know that it was a flop against Mariota, but the Raiders, they're currently ranked 29th against the pass this year, according to NumberFire's metrics. They haven't gotten a lot better since that Mariota outing. So I still do think that this is a team that we can target with opposing quarterbacks. Alex Smith, we know that he has a really good floor. But this could be one of those games, too, where he shows that ceiling. We've seen you know, quarterbacks do it against Oakland this year. They've allowed two top two quarterback finishes, one top four, or another guy in fourth, another guy in sixth. That was Joe Flacco, and Flacco has really had a pretty abysmal fantasy season so far. You mentioned the rushing upside for Alex Smith. I think that, you know, even if he is kind of a reverse psyche type guy as it pertains to like spreads and stuff like that, he does check a good number of boxes here still, even with that. So I like Alex Smith, and I think that this is a really good matchup for him.
Yeah, no. When a lot of people think of Alex Smith, they don't really consider his athleticism.
Right, right.
But no, he had the third most rushing yards at quarterback position last year. So when you mention the win speed factors, and we mentioned how we're not as worried about it with Tyrod because of the rushing ability, I think we can transfer that analysis onto Alex Smith. It might be lazy analysis, save us some time, but I still feel because if Alex Smith isn't going to throw the ball deep, he has no problem tucking and running. Or dumping it off to Jamaal Charles, who, according to him, is 100% this week.
Yeah,
so if it's
exciting.
It's great because if you're looking at a Kansas City Chiefs offense that has Jamaal Charles, Jeremy Maclin, Travis Kelce, all healthy, it gives Alex Smith just, you know, that one extra weapon. And I feel like this offense is already pretty good without Jamaal Charles this year. Now you add Charles into that, and we've seen what they can do together. Was it that one game in the playoffs where Alex Smith had 5 touchdowns, but what, 3 or 4 of them were to Jamaal Charles?
Right.
So, I mean, I'm not saying Jamaal Charles is going to catch 5 touchdown passes, but I'm also saying that it won't happen.
Just leaving that one out there,
exactly,
just in case
it happens. So if someone wins the Millionaire Maker because they listened to this podcast and said, oh, hey, Alex Smith is going to throw 5 touchdowns to Jamaal Charles, let's stack that game up. You can send me a check.
Right.
It's in Canada, so it won't cost you as much.
That's how it works, yeah.
Exactly. But no, you mentioned it's a great matchup for Alex Smith this week. No, you four quarterbacks have finished top 7 or better against this defense. Marcus Mariota was the lone spot. He was QB 30 that week. Even if you include that game, the Raiders are allowing the third most fantasy points per game to quarterbacks at a rate of 22.5. The only teams worse are Atlanta and Detroit. But if you take out Mariota's week 3 dud from that game, the Raiders have allowed 369 passing yards per game, 3 passing touchdowns per game to those 4 other quarterbacks, and that fantasy points per game figure would jump to 26.92.
Oh, man.
So it's,
what are they doing?
They probably wish they played Marcus Mariota every week.
Jeez.
But yeah, no, it's kind of crazy just to see how bad that Raiders defense has been because of how much hype it had going into the season, too, and all the money they spent to kind of have one of the better defenses out there. It just hasn't really translated to on-the-field performance. And I know Alex Smith isn't really someone you think of as a pass volume guy, but we've seen him throw more this year, and he's currently averaging 42 pass attempts per game. And if we take out that Mariota game again, the Raiders are have been seen about 38 pass attempts per game. So the potential there for a high volume game is in the cards. And just to leave you off with one more thing about just how bad the Oakland Raiders defense has been this year, 3 of the top 15 highest scoring quarterback performances on the whole season, and 2 of the top 12 have been against the Oakland Raiders.
Man.
Yeah, it's been bad.
Yeah, and I guess one other thing to add in here, too, on top of all what you've said, Sal, is that one reason potentially for some inefficiencies in the Kansas City offense before is that they had injuries on their offensive line. They got, I'm going to say his name wrong, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif back in week 4. And it looks like they might be getting healthier after their bye week. So the offensive line is getting better too. Jamaal Charles back. Yeah, I think that this is a really good one. Again, as long as the weather is okay.
Yeah, exactly. So no, check the number fires DFS helper lineup page in the morning to check out what the weather is like. So we'll move on to our next QB2 streamer of the week. And luckily, if you play in two quarterback leagues, you might be able to start both Alex Smith and Marcus Mariota in your lineup. But if you don't, and you're trying to make the decision between Alex Smith and Marcus Mariota, I think that's going to be a hard one this week because I kind of like them both about the same. If we look at the numbers for Mariota this week, up against the Cleveland Browns, currently have a 25.25 implied team total, are 7-point home favorites, with a over-under of 43.5, but again, like the other two games we mentioned, high wind speeds, currently at 12 miles per hour, so not as bad as the other two, but that's still pretty high.
Yeah, and it's above my zone, but it's at least better than the Tyrod game. So it's just kind of all over the place this week as far as weather goes, so it might be one of those weeks where there really are no good options. But I guess, you know, looking at Marcus Mariota, I know that there's some negative sentiment around him after that Oakland game, but one thing that I am trying to keep in mind in looking back to that game against Oakland where he looked like he was in a great spot and the Titans were awful. The thing I'm trying to keep in mind is that Delanie Walker did not play in that game. And Delanie Walker might honestly be the only competent piece in the passing offense in Tennessee outside of Marcus Mariota. I mean, if he doesn't have Delanie Walker, I find it very hard for me to expect him to have success. So it could be that I'm giving him a pass for what was a really bad game, but at the same time, I think that, you know, we do need to keep that in mind when evaluating Mariota. Like you said, Sal, Vegas does like this game. The implied team total is very high for Tennessee. Cleveland is 21st against the pass according to Number Fire's metrics, and every quarterback to face the Browns this year has finished quarterback 19 or higher, which is great. I mean, for you know, a two quarterback league, you know, you're getting someone who is at least startable every week. And Joe Flacco is the only one of those five quarterbacks who is below QB13. And this includes guys, you know, like Ryan Tannehill, who is legitimately awful. And I think that it's not going out on a limb to say that Marcus Mariota is better than Ryan Tannehill, regardless of what your opinions are of Marcus Mariota. He's probably better than Ryan Tannehill. So I think that I understand the negative sentiment around him, and this really isn't, I don't think, at least in my mind, Sal, I do want to hear your thoughts on this, though. I don't think it's reactionary based on what happened last week. Do you think it is, or do you think that we're okay in recommending Marcus Mariota here?
No, I think we're definitely okay recommending Marcus Mariota this week. I feel like he's one of the top streaming candidates, which is why we're talking about him right now. But just to go off your points here, the Delanie Walker missing that game against Oakland is, I think, maybe something we've kind of forgotten about just because we're focused on how bad Marcus Mariota performed in that game. But if you look at his stats from the year, his first two games, he averaged about 16.5 fantasy points. Then the Oakland game came without Delanie Walker. Then the next game he had a bad one because it was against the Houston Texans defense. So when you bring in that recency bias of having two back-to-back games and you see him explode against the Miami Dolphins, you're kind of wondering, is it for real or is it mirage? But when you bring in those factors, no Delanie Walker, then a Houston Texans defense, then he wins the Mariota Tannehill Bowl, it kind of makes sense that we're not chasing points in this instance. We feel that it's a sound process just based on the matchup. And you mentioned Joe Flacco is the only quarterback that finished worse than QB13. And Kirk Cousins is the other quarterback that wasn't a top 10 quarterback against Cleveland this year, but he was literally like half a point away from being the quarterback 12 that week. So you're looking at almost 4 out of 5 quarterbacks they faced to finish as a top 12 quarterback. They've allowed two or more touchdowns in every game and 3 quarterbacks to throw for 300 plus yards. And they're one of 4 teams allowing an average of 290 plus passing yards and 2 plus passing touchdowns per game this season. The other 3 are Oakland, the New York Jets, and Atlanta Falcons. I know the Jets are kind of surprised in that group because we just always assume the Jets are going to have a good defense every year, but we've seen that not to be the case. But Cleveland, Oakland, Atlanta, they've been kind of the gold standard of bad passing defense this year that you can target with your fantasy quarterback.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, going back to Marcus Mariota and kind of the psychology around him, we focus on that Oakland game because it was a dud, but at the same time, I think that we also, if we're doing that, we also need to account for the fact that he was really okay against the Minnesota Vikings, who we now know have one of the best defenses in all of football. In that game, he accounted for 4.54 passing net expected points, according to NumberFire, which is a good number against the Vikings. I'm trying to remember. I can actually look it up here, but I don't recall any other quarterback doing that well against them because, I mean, their defense is so good. We just kind of gloss over that, and we instead focus on the Oakland game for Marcus Mariota, which has really been his only super disappointing game this entire year. And I think that, you know, we shouldn't overlook that Minnesota game, too. I do have the numbers here now. Looking at quarterbacks facing the Vikings, so I said that Mariota accounted for 4.54 passing net expected points. He is the only quarterback to face the Vikings this year who has been better than -4. Like every other quarterback, Eli Manning, Brock Osweiler, Aaron Rodgers, and Cam Newton have all been -4 passing net expected points or worse. And Mariota was +4. So I'm starting to feel better about him now. You know, looking at all this, I'm trying to check myself to make sure I'm not points chasing, but, you know, factoring Delanie Walker being out in week 3, looking at how he did against Minnesota, even though Xavier Rhodes is out, I think that there are enough reasons to definitely consider him to be a solid fantasy option this week.
Yeah, no, we talk about how good the Minnesota Vikings defense has been. They haven't allowed a top 12 performance yet this year. But the thing is, like, they face good quarterbacks. Marcus Mariota, Aaron Rodgers, Cam Newton, Eli Manning. We'll avoid Brock Osweiler for right now. But when you list off those quarterbacks, Mariota's 271 passing yards was the most Minnesota has allowed. He's the only quarterback to score 2 touchdowns through the air against Minnesota this year. Aaron Rodgers had 2 combined touchdowns. And no, Marcus Mariota had the best finish against Minnesota this year, QB15. So, I mean, I think that's just more good things about Marcus Mariota this week that, you know, fantasy players may have just forgotten about or just decided not to look into. Just one last note about Marcus Mariota, because we kind of mentioned with Tyrod Taylor and Alex Smith earlier about the win factor, but Marcus Mariota is also a quarterback that, you know, sometimes runs the ball. He's rushed for 19 or more yards in 4 of his 5 games this year, so it's almost a 2-point fantasy boost to his floor. And we just saw how it can look like when he explodes for fantasy goodness on the ground, having 60 yards and a touchdown last week. So if you put in those factors with the high win speed, it's just another reason why we might not be as worried about the win in this particular instance, just based on the type of quarterback that we're talking about.
Yeah, and I think that I'm pretty cool with this one. I'm warming up to it too. I think that's the thing. Is I was worried about more. I was into him first, then I got worried about him, and now I'm back into him. So ask me Sunday morning how I'm thinking, because it could change before then again.
Like, I'm definitely with you in couple of 1 quarterback leagues that I'm consulting on through Draft Day Consultants. I've had this exact decision, Marcus Mariota versus Alex Smith, and I've been flip-flopping all week long.
Yep, absolutely.
And I feel like there's probably a lot of people out there, too, that are thinking, like, because those are a couple of quarterbacks that usually are available in 1 quarterback waiver wires, but not in 2 quarterback leagues, which we're talking about. All right, so those are our top 3 streamers of the week. Tyrod Taylor, Alex Smith, Marcus Mariota. Let's bring us on to the next segment, which we've been calling basically the quarterback to bench every week because mainly we don't have a clever name for this segment. But no, our listeners came through. We put out the call last week asking listeners to basically come up with a better name for this segment. And one of our listeners, at Thad, I'm going to say Junko. It might be Junko. I'm not really sure. But Thad, if you're out there listening, you can yell at me for getting your name wrong. But you can also take credit for renaming this segment the Clipboard Holder of the Week. So basically, this is a quarterback we recommend that you either don't start or would consider other options if they're better than this particular quarterback that we talk about. First up is Ryan Fitzpatrick. At the Arizona Cardinals, we'll go over the numbers quickly here, 19.5 implied team total, 7.5 underdogs on the road, 46.5 over-under, and this one is just right at 10 miles per hour wind speed.
Yeah, and I I'm not worried about Ryan Fitzpatrick just for this game, but now with Eric Decker out, it's bad, Sal.
Yeah, we made these show notes before the Eric Decker news came out. Like, yeah. I just kind of forgot about that until you just mentioned it.
It's bad. I mean, that's a big piece to lose from that offense. I know that Quincy Enunwa has been fine this year, Brandon Marshall's a great player, but against the Cardinals, he's going to see a lot of Patrick Peterson. So basically, Ryan Fitzpatrick is relying upon Quincy Enunwa and a bunch of undrafted rookie free agent wide receivers. That, to me, is frightening. And Jalen Marshall might not even play because he's hurt too. Austin Seferian Jenkins, I don't believe, practiced today. I didn't check back up on that, but I saw that he was wearing a hat at one point. It's just there's not a lot there outside of Marshall. So if Patrick Peterson is on Brandon Marshall, that could get bad. I'm honestly a bit surprised the Jets are only 7.5-point underdogs in this one. Like you said, Sal, an implied team total of 19.5. This is not good. And Fitzpatrick, and this includes a couple of games with Eric Decker, currently ranks 31st in number five's passing efficiency. He's ahead of two dudes who've already gotten benched. And then the other ones are Brock Osweiler, Ryan Tannehill, and Case Keenum. You do not want to be in that company. And, you know, I satirically ask for the Jets to play Geno Smith. But honestly, with the way things could potentially go the next few weeks of the Jets, it might happen. So I'm not just worried about Fitzpatrick this week. I think that that's a long-term issue for him.
Yeah, no, we've seen Fitzpatrick throwing the ball this year. It hasn't gone so well for him. he leads the league with INTs. I know that's mainly because he had 6 in one game against the Kansas City Chiefs. But still, he has thrown 10 interceptions. Right behind him is Jameis Winston with 8 INTs. I mentioned Jameis Winston because Winston did play against these Arizona Cardinals this year.
It was bad.
it could be a sign of things to come for Ryan Fitzpatrick this week. Winston that week was the QB 31. Last time I checked, there's 32 quarterbacks to start in the NFL. And he scored 4.62 fantasy points. And I mentioned Fitzpatrick had 6 INTs in one game against Kansas City. Jameis Winston had 4 in that game against Arizona in week 2. I know looking at their fantasy finishes allowed at the quarterback position, they've allowed 3 straight quarterbacks to finish top 13 or better. But 2 of those games have been kind of influenced by rushing totals, with Tyrod Taylor and Blaine Gabbert both rushing for 70-plus yards and a touchdown on the ground. I know Fitzpatrick has been known to tuck and run at times, score touchdowns via the ground, but I don't see him running for 70-plus yards and a touchdown this week.
And it's hard to bank on that, too, especially, you know, you're banking on a touchdown on the ground. And, you know, Fitzpatrick is pretty athletic and he can get rushing. But to put all of your eggs in a rushing touchdown basket for a quarterback, especially a Ryan Fitzpatrick, that's putting a pretty big gamble out there.
I think the Eric Decker news just made this play even a worse one for me.
Right.
Because when you add in the 19.5 implied team totals, plus the win speeds, plus going up against a defense that has been known to be a vulture in the secondary to pick off passes, it just screams fade to me for the week.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, there really isn't a situation in which I would use Ryan Fitzpatrick. Like, I'd use a lot of our rapid-fire guys over Fitzpatrick this week.
Yeah, no, easily. One other quarterback we have here in the clipboard holder of the week segment is Philip Rivers against the Denver Broncos. 45.5 over under. It's a Thursday night football game, so if you're going to make the decision, you got to check out your lineups tomorrow. They're currently 3.5 home underdogs with a 21 implied team total. The win speed isn't as bad as the other games, but it's at 8, so it's kind of hovering around that mark. So you're going to want to watch out for that tomorrow. But did I mention the over-under at 45.5? If I did, I'll just do it again. 45.5 over under. We know Denver is a defense you kind of want to avoid in fantasy football. This year, of the 5 quarterbacks they face, 1 has been a top 10. That was Cam Newton in week 1. The other finishes QB 28, QB25, QB23, and QB19. They've only allowed 3 passing touchdowns to 5 interceptions, so it's definitely not a good matchup for Phillip Rivers this week.
No, it's really not. And I think that, you know, Phillip Rivers is a good quarterback, and that definitely does help him. But this matchup is really bad. You know, you look at those Broncos teams, and Sal, you were talking about those finishes. They have had 2 road games so far, and the opposing quarterbacks finished 24th and 25th in weekly scoring. And those were Andy Dalton and Jameis Winston. And Rivers is better than them. So I guess basically my expectation in handling Phillip Rivers here is I'm setting the bench at about like QB. It's essentially the same way I viewed Matt Ryan last week. He could be around QB 18, QB 20. There's more downside there too, but he could also potentially exceed that. I just think that his range of outcomes for me, I'd probably set it like QB 15 and lower. Is that realistic in your mind?
No, I think it's realistic because we've seen Phillip Rivers put up fantasy points in bad matchups before. Yeah. So it's not like we hate Phillip Rivers. Like,
right.
No, sure. He's a good real-life quarterback. He's a good fantasy quarterback. And just when you're going up against the Denver Broncos, it gives you pause because we've seen this year. No, Matt Ryan was the overall fantasy quarterback 1 heading into week 5. No, his first 4 weeks, he was the QB6, QB2, QB8. QB1 and averaged 26.9 points per game. And then we saw it happen against the Denver Broncos last week. I know 15 fantasy points almost, which isn't bad. No, it's a right. Decent number for your quarterback too, but he finished as the QB19. So he scored about 11 or 12 fantasy points less than he was averaging in the first 4 weeks of the season. And that's because, you know, he went up against the Denver Broncos, who are currently allowing the 8th fewest fantasy points per game at a clip of 13.5. So, you know, the numbers tell us that this is a bad matchup. The process tells us that this is a bad matchup for Phillip Rivers. But, you know, before I came onto the podcast, I was, you know, scrolling Twitter as I sometimes do. It's a way to pass time.
Once or twice a day.
You know, once or twice a day or once or twice per second.
Yep.
we're doing the math correctly. Yep. But, no, the new NFL Research Twitter account, which you can find at NFL Research, threw out this stat. So only 1 quarterback has thrown multiple passing touchdowns in a game against the Broncos in the 2016 calendar year. And, Jim, I'll let you guess who that quarterback is.
I may not have that tweet up. So I will abstain. I'm staring at it right now because I don't follow them. So I was going to follow them. So bad timing on that. I am looking at it right now.
that quarterback is Phillip Rivers.
So, yep.
Like, he can put up fantasy points against this Denver Broncos defense. No, even if you were to get 0 yards, 0 interceptions. Well, I guess you can't have 0 yards. You're going to get a touchdown. So let's say 2 yards, 2 touchdowns. That's still 12 fantasy points.
Yeah.
I think eight or 12 fantasy points.
And referencing that tweet you were talking about, Sal, that game was the final game of last year, meaning he was without Keenan Allen in that one too. So, I mean, and Tyrell Williams has looked good. It's a better situation. It's an okay situation for him, but yeah, I agree. I think that you can start him if you don't have anything else.
Right.
But there, you could potentially have 2 better options than him.
No, I definitely think so too. And then plus, you know, one thing I like to do is look at Thursday Night Football from a fantasy perspective. And I threw these up in the show notes for, I won't go through every quarterback just because we're running long on time here, but no, of the Thursday Night Football games this year, excluding week 1, we've seen 3 quarterbacks finish as a top 12 plus a fourth quarterback with a QB 13 finish. And the other 4 have been 18. So QB 18 or worse with, a couple of quarterbacks scoring 8 or less fantasy points, you know, against Brock Oswald and Ryan Tannehill. So no, Phillip Rivers isn't in their category, but there's still something about that Thursday Night Football game that always gives me hesitation when it comes to starting a quarterback.
I agree. I think that's another demerit for good old Felipe Rios there.
Right. But then again, no, I mentioned Matt Stafford in this segment last week, and he ended up as a top 10 quarterback. So who knows? Anything could happen.
We cured Tyrod back in week 2. Maybe we can cure. Maybe we can keep old Philly in there too.
I mean, if we were to, you know, recall our missed calls, if I do recall week 1 of this podcast, Phillip Rivers was the quarterback we recommended to bench.
That's true. Yeah.
And he went out and had a pretty good game that week.
He probably heard it. He responds well to adversity. Is that the narrative we can push on Philip Rivers?
He was probably listening to our podcast as he was in the midst of making another baby. So I can see that happening.
He's just perpetually doing that, though. So that's kind of a baseline assumption.
It's just more motivation for him. All right. So Jim mentioned rapid fire picks. So we'll just move into that segment now. The first quarterback in our rapid fire segment of the week is Brian Hoyer. Going into the podcast, he was actually in our top streaming recommendations segment. But I had a little bit of a hesitation in putting him there. So we kind of bumped him down into rapid fire. And we'll get to that pretty soon. Just quickly go over Brian Hoyer's matchup of the week. It's at home against the Jacksonville Jaguars. They have a 24.7 implied team total. Currently 2.5 point favorites at home, which is basically, we've mentioned a pick'em game. High 47 over under, though. And the wind speed's at 7 miles per hour. So finally a game where it's, we don't have to worry too much about the wind.
Yeah, exactly. 7 miles per hour is fine. There is a chance for some precipitation, but I worry less about precipitation. It says light rain now. If it's drizzle or light rain, I think that's okay for a quarterback. That's, it's when it's heavier rain or higher winds that I worry more. So I'd take the light rain over the high winds. So, that's fine for Brian Hoyer. I guess my main issue for him is that the matchup isn't quite as good as I thought it would be. You look at the Jacksonville Jaguars, they're much improved. They're currently number five's 8th ranked pass defense. I guess when I'm looking at that in a game by game perspective, a lot of that is buoyed by pretty awful performances by Andrew Luck and Joe Flacco. Flacco was in Jacksonville, and last year Jacksonville had significant home road splits as far as their pass defense goes. And Andrew Luck was over in London without Dante Moncrief, just kind of a sloppy game over there. So I think that they're not as good as they appear, based on those number fire metrics initially. I do think that they're being helped out quite a bit by those two games, and I think that they'll come down. For me, I guess the question is, how much has Hoyer benefited from really good matchups previously? But you look at his number fire efficiency stats, he's currently the 7th most efficient quarterback. He is 3rd in success rate. To me, at least, that says that he has a good floor. I'm a bit worried about the other factors in this game. So I think that if you're shooting for floor, at least from my perspective, Brian Hoyer is okay. There are just some, some factors that may limit his ceiling a bit.
I think he's an okay start. I would even label him a good start, but I don't think it's a great start that we kind of expected after what he's done the first 3 weeks of the season. So, he scored he scored 17-plus fantasy points in 9 of his last 14 games. It's not really something you expect out of Brian Hoyer when you just think of Brian Hoyer, the quarterback. But he can put up fantasy points, so we do know that. And in his 3 starts this year, he scored at least 18 fantasy points in each of them and has been a top 12 quarterback in all 3. So those are the good things for Brian Hoyer. And we've seen a lot of that has been based on pass volume. He's attempted 45 passes per game and is thrown an average of 340 passing yards per game. So there's a lot of good for Brian Hoyer in this game. But what was kind of, bringing me down was when I was looking at the Jacksonville Jaguars, what they've done against quarterback position this year. They've allowed 3 quarterbacks to finish top 13 or better. 2 have been QB7s. Those QB7s were Aaron Rodgers and Philip Rivers. And the QB13 was Andrew Luck. The other finish was QB21 for Joe Flacco, which is kind of, mentioned that he finished his QB21 without throwing a passing touchdown, but then we saw that he scored one on the ground because, Joe Flacco is now Konami Flacco this year, just scoring touchdowns left and right on the ground, helping out his fantasy days. I'm not going to go out on a limb and predict that Brian Hoyer is going to score a rushing touchdown this week. That's not what I'm saying. But when you look at the actual box scores game by game, the Jags are allowing only an average of 216 passing yards per game. And they're allowing about 35 passing attempts per game. So when you compare those two averages to Brian Hoyer's averages, I feel like this might be a little bit of a trap game if we're thinking that Brian Hoyer is going to go out and have like a fantastic fantasy day. I still think he could score around 15 fantasy points, which is not a bad thing at all. I just don't see a high ceiling for him this week that maybe I thought he might have had if I didn't actually study the matchup more deeply going into this podcast.
Yeah, I think it comes down to expectation, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, they have the Jaguars have allowed two or more touchdowns through the air in three of their four games. So, I mean, again, there's a lot of good for Brian Hoyer in this game. I just feel that we should temper our, as you said, expectations a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to go about it for him.
All right, so we'll move on from Brian Hoyer to our next rapid-fire candidate, which is Andy Dalton at the New England Patriots. They also have a low implied team total currently at 19.25. The New England Patriots are favored by 8.5 points. This game is at New England. Again, a high over-under of 47, and current win speed is projected at 8.0 miles per hour. It's the same as saying 8 miles per hour. So those are the statistics for the matchup. So I'll let you take this one from here, Jim.
Yeah, I think that in looking at Andy Dalton, I think that he has a really nice ceiling. I would say that his ceiling is above Brian Hoyer's. My concern is his floor. I think that he has a scary range of outcomes in this one. But I think that if you're looking at that ceiling, part of that does stem from how he's performed as an underdog in the past. This is only four games, looking back to the start of last year using the RotoViz Game Splits app. But over the past 2 years, Dalton has averaged 1.75 touchdowns per game in those four games where his team has been an underdog, which is more than he has averaged in other games. He's averaged 10 additional attempts per game, according to that same RotoViz Game Splits app. The Patriots, you know, they're okay against the pass. They've got some really talented corners, but overall, they're still 16th against the pass, according to NumberFire's metrics. So it's not as if there is some suffocating defense. And what you love about Dalton in this game is you don't really want to chase volume. But when it's an okay quarterback like Andy Dalton, I mean, he's not great, but he's okay. You can chase that volume. You can feel more safe in it. And I think that for me at least, makes me feel better about him. Carson Palmer had success against the Patriots while a negative game script. Same goes for Ryan Tannehill back in week two. We've seen quarterbacks do okay against them when they've been forced to throw. And I think that's what we'll see with Andy Dalton here. I think that the floor, again, is frightening. But if you're willing to inherit that scary floor, his upside is, to me at least, a little bit tempting.
You know, I definitely feel more comfortable starting Andy Dalton than I would Brian Hoyer, which is
kind of odd
to say because of them being 8.5 underdogs with a low implied team total. But no, harping back to what we've talked about during the run of this short podcast is what Alex Smith has done in those types of situations. You don't always want to bank on negative game flow or garbage time stats. But in this particular instance, I feel like that might be something we do want to bank on. If you look at the game last week between the Bengals and the Cowboys, it was 28-0 going into the fourth quarter. And we saw that Andy Dalton threw two passing touchdowns in the fourth quarter. So that definitely is going to help out in terms of game script, because I feel like the Patriots are going to get out to a big lead in this game. And the Bengals are going to have to pass to catch up with them. So I feel like in this instance, there's going to be a lot of passing volume going on for Andy Dalton, because they're going to have to catch up points-wise against the Patriots. And like I mentioned, with the Jaguars kind of being a better defense than we thought, I feel like the Patriots are kind of a worse defense than we think against quarterbacks, at least through the first five games of the season this year. If you go through it on a game-by-game basis, they have allowed four of the quarterbacks they faced. If you combine Charlie Whitehurst and Cody Kessler into one quarterback from week five, they've allowed four of the five quarterbacks they faced to score at least 15 fantasy points, with Ryan Tannehill being the highest at almost 23 fantasy points. We've mentioned Ryan Tannehill being kind of a bad quarterback, and if you put the two easy math together, 2-2, bad quarterback against the Patriots defense, you can reasonably see a game where Andy Dalton could put up 20 fantasy points in this game. And if we take out the one quarterback who did not have a good fantasy game against these Patriots, which was Brock Osweiler, the Patriots allowed 18.53 fantasy points per game to quarterbacks when you deduct Brock Osweiler, which will be the 10th most in the league this year.
Yeah, and I think that, again, the key for looking at this Patriots team, you mentioned, you know, that they're maybe not as good as we think they are, and I think that's totally the correct assessment. Basically, what you're doing, though, is you're accepting risk. And in my, when I'm assessing, a quarterback two slot, I generally try to mitigate risk. I'm not a huge risk taker overall, but there are situations where the upside is good enough where I'm okay with it. And I think that's kind of where I'm at with Andy Dalton right now.
Yeah, I know there were some reports today about AJ Green. Was he missing practice?
Yeah, he didn't practice today, but it's just Wednesday, so it could be okay. I don't know.
And then Tyler Eifert didn't practice either, but that's not really an indication that he won't play this week because basically he's been out all season.
So yeah.
Something to monitor. But if the practice reports are positive for Tyler Eifert heading into the game, I think that's just one more positive for Andy Dalton. And if you want to go to sleep comfortably well, knowing that you're going to start Andy Dalton this week, just know that Cody Kessler and Charlie Whitehurst, who was recently cut just this week after this game happened, they combined to score 15.5 fantasy points against the New England Patriots. This time, I am going to go out on a limb on this one and say that Andy Dalton is a better quarterback than those two combined.
Okay. I think that's offensive to the Cody Kessler truther in me, and I'm going to have to reevaluate a lot of things now, Sal. You got to take that one back. It's a low blow to Cody Kessler.
What do you think? From what I know of your travel plans, you will be in my country this week.
This is true.
So I will be in Montreal. We could meet somewhere and have a duel of some sort.
Yes. And I'll wear my Cody Kessler jersey to the duel because I most certainly own one.
There, that's an image for our listeners right there.
Yes.
Someone owning a Cody Kessler jersey. I mean, I can't really talk because I own a jersey of every team Tim Tebow has played for in the NFL.
Really?
So something literally in my closet.
Oh, that's cool. I would have burned the Jets once because I grew up a Jets fan, and that was a really rough year. But I like that. But yeah, I think, thinking more seriously, you're correct. As much as I love Cody Kessler, I agree. Andy Dalton is better than them, and I think that does make him at least very interesting for this week.
All right, so here's a probably an underlying theme of this podcast, which I might have been more vocal about than my good friend Jim on the other line. But I've been mentioning a lot about Brock Osweiler being a bad quarterback and how he's kind of been like the linchpin of like the bad quarterback performances versus all the other good quarterback performances some teams have allowed this year. But yet again, here we are in the rapid fire segment, which we recommend quarterbacks to start. And we have Brock Osweiler's name on this list. Now, he's playing the Indianapolis Colts. Some good things about this matchup. 24.75 implied team total, 46.5 over under. Currently 3-point home favorites, which it's okay. The wind speeds are at 9 miles per hour, getting close to that 10, but still under it. The Indianapolis Colts have allowed three quarterbacks to finish as a top 5 quarterback or better out of 5 games. They currently sport a 7-1 passing touchdown to interception ratio, have allowed 300 plus passing games, have allowed 2 or more touchdowns in 3 of their games. Brian Hoyer just threw almost 400 yards and 2 touchdowns against the Colts this very past week. So those are all good factors for Brock Osweiler, which I feel like you would agree with me on that point, Jim.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. But I think that, looking at this one, a lot of it does come down to the matchup against the Indianapolis Colts. And I was expecting the Colts to get better once Vontae Davis was back, but that hasn't happened. They're currently 30th against the pass, according to NumberFire's metrics. They were better than that when Davis played his first game against the San Diego Chargers. So they're actually shifting the wrong way. And we look at the quarterbacks who have faced Indy. Not a single one of them has had a negative pass efficiency rating based on NumberFire's metrics. The worst one so far is Philip Rivers at 3.16 passing net expected points. The best is Matthew Stafford at 23. And no one has been, negative. That includes the hyper inefficient Blake Bortles. He hates efficiency with a fervent passion, but he was at 5.79. And Trevor Siemian had a good game against them from an efficiency standpoint. They're really bad. I know that Brock Osweiler is also really bad, but I guess, looking at Brock, one thing that I'm trying to factor in when looking at him is that his first 4 games, he was without Dwayne Brown, who was a left tackle, who was really good, really, really good left tackle. And I think that his presence being back, he was back in week 5, but that was against Minnesota on the road. Now they're back at home. They have Dwayne Brown back. I I'm liking this offense as a whole, not just, you know, Lamar Miller in season long, you know, Will Fuller. I'm warming to DeAndre Hopkins, but I think that all of that will help Brock Osweiler too. And this is just a really good matchup. I'm not starting him over Dalton. I'm not starting him over Hoyer, guys like that. But if you're in a situation where you need to start Brock Osweiler, I'm starting him over Ryan Fitzpatrick every time. But there are certain situations in which I'd be totally cool with using him.
Yeah, no, that's definitely rare. In certain instances, Brock Osweiler is the smart choice. He's the better choice, like you mentioned, Ryan Fitzpatrick. But it just, for, you know, people that have played two quarterback fantasy football for many, many years, or people that are just new to the 2QB or Superflex format, you're going to be faced with these types of scenarios pretty much every week, where you have a bad quarterback in a good matchup, and you're trying to decide if you should start him over a good quarterback in a bad matchup. This is where, you know, mind games come into effect in fantasy football, where you might at times overthink things and feel like you're making the right decision based on, you know, either past results, how quarterbacks are currently playing, but that in the end turns out to be like the wrong decision, just basically because you were blocking yourself off from starting up basically a quarterback who you think sucks. If we want to just, you know, be straight up with it. And I feel like Brock Osweiler this year has been a quarterback who's been underwhelming. I'll be nice about it.
No, I think you were right. You were on the right path there. We'll leave it at that.
You know, I mean, if you look at the stats on the service and you don't dig too deep into it, he's thrown less touchdowns than he has interceptions, which never makes a fantasy owner happy. He has thrown a high of 268 passing yards and has thrown under 200 yards in a game twice this year. His high fantasy point total is 16.64, which, no, is good. We're happy when we get about 15 points out of our quarterback, too. We want to get, no, more than that, obviously. But we're happy when they get at least 15. But he scored 11 or less fantasy points, or I guess 11 or fewer fantasy points, if I want to be grammatically correct, three times this year. So when you look at, when you factor all of those together, you have this picture that Brock Osweiler is a very bad quarterback who you do not want to start. And I feel like many two quarterback Superflex players are in this particular situation this week, because, you know, Brock Osweiler was kind of like a late round quarterback. Mm-hmm. I'll say darling just because I can't think of a better word right now, but just because of the offense he was in, Bill O'Brien is the coach, had Will Fuller, DeAndre Hopkins, Lamar Miller. No, Dwayne Brown injury happened kind of late-ish in the offseason, but all the factors were, you know, in Osweiler's favor. And he had a really good draft day cost. So I feel like a lot of people ended up with Brock Osweiler on their two quarterback team and now are in this situation where they're wondering, you know, if they should start him, if they're going to get a good performance or if they're going to get a bad performance. But when you look at it just from a matchups point of view, you would start Brock Osweiler. If we took the name off and you saw quarterback versus Indianapolis Colts, you would be very happy to start that quarterback this week.
And I don't want to fathom what happens if he fails in this matchup.
I mean, like, we've been excited for no bad-ish quarterbacks against the Colts this week, or not this week, this season. Now, we recommended Trevor Siemian without hesitation in week two. He didn't go out and have that great of a game. We mentioned Brian Hoyer's performance last week against the Colts. We were very excited about that. He ended up being the quarterback five. So the potential is there for Brock Osweiler to have a good game. So this is mainly more of me having a long-winded monologue on, you know, the theory behind starting bad quarterbacks in two quarterback leagues.
Gotta do it sometimes, as much as it may hurt.
As much as it may hurt. The Brock Osweiler Week 6 fantasy story.
Right.
So that's kind of our last rapid-fire recommendation of the week. We have one more quarterback who we want to talk about this week, but also kind of like a going-forward prognostication, and that's Colin Kaepernick, who was just recently renamed the starting quarterback in San Francisco. It's the first time he'll be the starting quarterback in the Chip Kelly regime, which is something a lot of fantasy writers, fantasy players, NFL, just fans of the NFL have kind of been dreaming about ever since Chip Kelly came into the NFL. We are always thinking, now what if Colin Kaepernick played in Chip Kelly's offense? And here we are, week six of the NFL season, and it's actually happening. In his first game as a starter in San Francisco, he is on the road in Buffalo, 18.5 implied team total, 44.5 over under. They're currently 7.5-point road underdogs. We mentioned the win factor when we recommend Tyrod Taylor. Number fire hasn't changed yet. It's still at 18 miles per hour. So looking at those numbers, not really the prettiest picture painted for Colin Kaepernick's fantasy projection this week. What would you say, Jim?
Yeah, I think this week the Bills' defense actually has been pretty good this year. I was down on them heading into the season. They looked bad early on. But against the pass, they're ranked 13th right now based on number fires metrics. They're even better against the rush. So he's not a guy I'd be looking to use this week. But going forward, I think that he does have a really interesting outlook, because you look at Blaine Gabbert in this offense. He had 9 rushes week 1, 3, and then 5, and then 12, and then 10. Like, Blaine Gabbert was running the ball a lot. I know that Gabbert is potentially doing that because he's an awful quarterback, and hopefully Kaepernick is better than that. But, you know, there is a lot of rushing upside in this offense, and that's what we want, is we want that Konami code with that solid floor. And I'm not saying that Kaepernick is going to be good enough to do that, but there's absolutely a possibility that he could be. So he's kind of, my philosophy with Colin Kaepernick is kind of just, why not? You know, what's the downside in investing and seeing what happens, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, for this week, I feel like the only time you would start Colin Kaepernick is a cheap GPP option on a DFS site. If you play on a DFS site where you start two quarterbacks, this could be an interesting game to stack both offenses, or at least both quarterbacks, with Kaepernick and Tyrod.
Yeah.
I'm not really advising you do that, but I feel that that might be the only situation where you would feel okay starting Kaepernick, because you mentioned Buffalo's defense has been pretty good this year against quarterbacks. They've allowed one quarterback to finish top 12 or better, which was Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's QB9, but the other four finishes they've allowed is QB23, QB31, QB26, and QB26. When you look at those numbers, you kind of want to avoid quarterbacks playing against Buffalo. For this game in particular, this is a tidbit from Jason Shandell from the Draft Day Consultants DFS newsletter, which drops tomorrow. So you guys are getting a little bit of a bonus cut here. So this is where he mentioned Kaepernick has posted an interception rate of at least 2% in each of his last two seasons. The Bills currently rank 6th in the NFL with a 3.4% interception rate, and their turnover rate is a league best 19.6%. So again, all signs pointing towards not wanting to start Colin Kaepernick this week.
And this week is the operative phrase there, though, because he faces Tampa Bay next week, and after their bye, it's New Orleans.
Exactly.
Not saying. I'm just saying.
No, it's definitely, it's if for some reason Colin Kaepernick was still available in your two quarterback or super flex league, you should definitely put in a waiver claim to pick him up for the going forward projections of, you know, a nice fantasy schedule. And then if we look at what Kaepernick can do on the ground, because we've seen what Blaine Gabbert did. Jim mentioned earlier, it might be because Blaine Gabbert doesn't know how to read defense and just wants to tuck and run the ball. But he did lead the league in rushing yards by quarterback at the time of his ouster with 172 yards on the ground. He is averaged, this is Blaine Gabbert, Blaine Gabbert has averaged 5.84 fantasy points per game on the ground, which was the most of any quarterback in the league. And 41% of his fantasy points came from the ground, which was the most by any starter. The second most was Cam Newton at 33%. So we've seen the fantasy goodness from the ground that Blaine Gabbert produced this year, whether that's because he was trying to save himself or because he is actually a good quarterback on the ground. I'll leave that up to the listener to conclude the answer. But now here comes Colin Kaepernick. In his last 4 years, he rushed for 256 yards, 641 yards, 524 yards, and 415 rushing yards from 2015 going backwards to 2012. He's finished no worse than eighth in terms of rushing yards from the quarterback position. That was last year, which he only played in, I believe it was 9 games he appeared in. And then he had the second most the year before in 2014. The interesting thing about all those rushing yards is only 2014 and 2013 is when he played a full 16-game season. So if Colin Kaepernick plays a full game, were to play a full game, full 16-game season, it's very conceivable to see him rush for, you know, 500, 600, 700 yards in a Chip Kelly offense over a 16-game season. We're not going to get that this year, but I still feel the wheels are going to be off in this offense for Kaepernick to kind of run wild and score fantasy points, which is something we've seen Chip Kelly quarterbacks do since he's joined the NFL.
He only needs to average 45 rushing yards per game over the final 11 to get to 500 for the season. So you never know. Yeah. There's always that possibility.
And like I said, we've seen Blaine Gabbert have 70-yard rushing games this year. Like, it can happen. Again, I'm going to go out on a limb here, Jim, and say that Colin Kaepernick is a better rusher than Blaine Gabbert.
I won't leave you alone this crazy? Time.
No, okay.
I will happily join you.
There we go. So like I said, going over schedule again quickly for the listeners out there, San Francisco has the Buffalo Bills this week, which we really don't recommend. But following that, back-to-back matchups with Tampa Bay and New Orleans sandwiched in within a week 8 bye. So if you're looking forward to next week or even 2 weeks from now, if you're the type of player who likes to look forward with your fantasy lineups, there's something to be excited about with Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, there's something there. I'm excited to see how he does, regardless of whether or not it's good. I'm just excited that we finally get to see this thing that you've been talking about, this Colin Kaepernick in a Chip Kelly offense. It should be fun, no matter whether it goes good or horrifically. It should just be a lot of fun to watch. That's honestly all I'm really looking for at this point, and especially against Tyrod Taylor. That game may stink on paper, but I think it'll be an enjoyable experience.
I'm trying to remember who it was on Twitter that dubbed this the Konami Bowl. I know it's someone we both mutually follow. It might even be someone that writes for 2QBs.com. I can't remember who it was. But when they said that, I'm like, yes, Tyrod Taylor, Colin Kaepernick, Chip Kelly, this is the Konami Bowl.
I love that. Kudos to whoever that was.
So, I mean, it'd be nice if the wins kind of tapered down a bit. We didn't have to worry about weather, but then again, we don't really care a whole lot with the types of quarterbacks involved, because maybe it will be a lot of rushing from the quarterbacks this week. But what's most important is this should be a fun game to watch.
It was Greg Smith. I found it.
Not only does Greg Smith write for 2QBs.com, he's also the president.
Right. It was actually a gif of Colin Kaepernick with a 91-yard run. And I'm going to watch that on a loop for like the next half hour.
Just watch that. And then the Terrell Pryor 90-yard touchdown run against the Steelers. Just put those on an endless loop and you're pretty much happy until Sunday comes.
I know what I'm doing for the rest of the night.
All right. So for the people still listening to this podcast, I know we've kind of run longer than we usually do. I went on a couple of tangents here. Thank you for still listening. If you're with your headphones pumping out the podcast, which will be released later this evening. So I'm kind of talking to people in the future right now. I'll go backwards though for a moment and recap the podcast quickly. Our top streamers of the week are the aforementioned Tyrod Taylor and the Konami Bowl. Following that, we also like Alex Smith, which shouldn't surprise too many people who listen to this podcast, and then Marcus Mariota. Those are our top three streamers, which I think we kind of feel really confident about this week. After that, other quarterbacks we kind of like in a rapid-fire section were Brian Hoyer, Andy Dalton. I'll say Brock Osweiler again against the Indianapolis Colts. Just focus on that part versus the Indianapolis Colts.
Yes.
We talked about Colin Kaepernick. If you feel frisky enough to start him this week, you can. Numbers don't really say that you should, though. And then after that, our segment, which we have now labeled the clipboard holder of the week, thanks to @Thad. Junko on Twitter, which is quarterbacks we kind of don't really like, who we would bench if we had better options, is Ryan Fitzpatrick taking on the Arizona Cardinals, and Philip Rivers Thursday Night Football, which will be tonight, if you're listening to this podcast in the morning, against the Denver Broncos. So that kind of recaps our recommendations to start and bench this week. Man, I did a lot of talking in that segment. Gonna have to go get a sip of some sparkling water once I get off the line here. So again, that's it for this week in terms of quarterbacks who we talked about.
Don't really know. Hopefully the results are better than they were last week. Fingers crossed on that end.
I mean, and then if they're not, we always have the fallback of relying on process over results.
Right. We'll pray that the process was actually right.
All right. So that will put a bow on the week 6 episode of the QB2 Experience podcast, which is presented by 2QBs.com. That's where you can find all of my fantasy writing this year, plus this podcast. You can find me on Twitter at 2QBFFB, where I will be tweeting out Alex Smith heart doodle pictures all week long, and my delightful co-host Jim Saunas, who will be a honorary Canadian citizen this weekend while he visits our fine country. You can find Jim on Twitter, again, at Jim Saunas, spelled out JimSaunes. Jim, why don't you let the listeners know where they can find your work?
Yeah, all my work is up at numberfire.com. I'll have 5 matchups to exploit on the website Thursday morning, focusing on DFS. And the guys I'm talking about there likely won't be available in your 2 quarterback leagues, but we will have a little shout-out for Alex Smith in there as a little preview.
And make sure to check out the NumberFire DFS Helper lineup page on Sunday mornings. Check out how the weather is changing, if any of the lines have moved. When I was on there earlier today, it welcomed me with a big fantasy heat check podcast ad. So if for those of you out there listening that don't know what that is, that's another podcast that Jim co-hosts.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Brandon Gadula is a smart dude, so it's fun to, swap some thoughts with him. We talk DFS on there. We talk about weather a lot, which will be a big topic this week. That comes out Thursday night if you subscribe to the SoundCloud page, and then we'll post up on NumberFire as well on Friday morning, rather.
Perfect. So that's it from us this week. Good luck in week 6 with your fantasy decisions, and have another happy week of quarterback streaming. We gotta stay positive.